Before we commence today's sermon, let us take a moment to realize how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude, let's take a moment to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate One, the One who expounded the Dhamma, which is perfect in the beginning, middle, and end, the One that showed us the path to our own liberation, the Tathagata. To do so, please recite the Namaskara all together with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa.
Yesterday, I don't know about everywhere else, but I know about the monastery, it was raining. And then it brought back memories. It was raining the entire day. I think we may have had 10 minutes, give or take, of no rain. The rest of the day, it was raining. I think that's the one thing that is special about tropical countries like Sri Lanka, is that when it rains, it rains. As in, when you go to other places all around the world, you realize that, say for example, if I talk about my experiences in the UK, when it rains, it is like the most, I would say, pathetic rain you'll ever see. Like a small drizzle that stays the entire day. But in Sri Lanka, it rains heavy. But normally it rains all at once for probably 10 minutes and then stops. But yesterday we saw a lot of rain. Now, rain causes problems. Why? Because now we have lots of water. So for example, our almost drainage systems have all been overflowed. However, we're working to get all that fixed. And so yesterday, it was very, very wet. So what question did I ask myself? Is rain wet? You see, on our journey to Nibbana, there is nothing that can stop you. What I mean is, every situation that you face, whether it's so-called positive or so-called negative, every situation that we face is nothing that, there's nothing that can actually stop you from attaining Nibbana, unless you do one of the five heinous crimes. But I don't think anyone here would do anything like that if given a chance. But apart from that, everything else is an opportunity. For example, it rained yesterday. That is an opportunity. Let's say for the next 3 months, it's a drought. That itself is what? No, it's horrible, it's a drought, no, there's no water, what are we going to do? Yes, we have to think about what we're going to do, but it's also an opportunity to what? Practice. Let's say, I don't know, thanks to climate change, it starts snowing in Sri Lanka. Are we going to start crying or celebrating? Crying because it's cold, or celebrating because it's snowing? Well, neither. It's funny because you'll see other people all around either cry in with joy or cry in fear or in sadness. However, if you come to the monastery, no one's crying. Everyone is what? Practicing the path. You see, this is the thing. We have to take every opportunity that we ever get. For example, if you ever get the opportunity to stand up and talk in front of all of, say, for example, you get the opportunity to present to all of the Sita Shravikas. Now, the first thing you feel is, maybe not. Maybe that's not for me. I mean, I can't present. I can't do that. That's impossible for me. But that's an opportunity that you've been given to what? Practice. Because we always have this thing that, you know, when we get a thought that we don't like, for example, you have a thought of anger. Just look at what now as we are practicing, right? As we have someone who practices them. Look what our mind first does. You get angry. Or let's say you're given time to meditate and the first thing you think about is chocolate. How much you love chocolate. Or how much you crave for chocolate. Now, what our mind immediately does, it says, I'm not angry. Or I'm angry and I don't like being angry. I want to forget about being angry. Or I want to forget about, or say you're doing your work and there's a reoccurring thought. For example, something that you have done that you've done say yesterday that you now regret. What we normally do is we push that down and we try to forget about it. We try to forget of it. You remember your favorite song. What do you do? Rupang anicca, vedana anicca. And you try to forget about it. Because why? It's not good. Remembering my favorite song, that's not good. I should be thinking about what? How sound is anicca. Or how colors are not... Forget about this song. Try to forget about the song. The thing is, the more you try to forget about something, the more it comes back into your mind. See, the first thing that we try to do is always what? Let's forget. I don't know. It's not me. That's not what I'm thinking about. I want to think about X, Y, and Z. You see, this itself is an opportunity. When you are faced with things like this, so you remember your favorite food, you remember your favorite song, you remember something that you did that you enjoyed when you were back at home. You remember it. What's wrong with remembering? Nothing. However, if you have that feeling that no, that's not supposed to be. I'm now a Sita Shravaka, Sita Shravaka, I can't think about my favorite song, even though I enjoy it, I can't think about it. That's wrong. Let me try to forget about it. Doing that is, you can almost say, the worst thing you can do. Because what you are telling your mind is, this is a song that I like. I find it pleasurable. So what should I do? Forget about it. Because why? I can't contemplate. I can't contemplate. And you push it to a side because you think, I can't do anything. But what we have to do is use the opportunity to the maximum we possibly can. And what should we do? Contemplate. Ask yourself, why? You know, something that you all realize is, you know, when you listen to sermons, when you do meditation, right, when you go to the Venerable Mother, when you start to contemplate, when you're walking and doing something and going here and there, our minds will do things that we don't want it to do. For example, you're listening to a sermon. Now I said, you know, you listen to your favorite song. I am guessing 99% of you remembered that song. No. When I said, you heard your favorite song, did a song not pop into your mind? Now, you can say then, sometimes when ideas pop into your mind, for example, you think about your, I don't know, let's say, in a sermon, they take an example of flowers. You remember the last time you went through a flower garden, and you spend the next 5 minutes just thinking about the flower garden, regardless of what the sermon says, and then you remember, oh, I'm listening to a sermon, I should forget about that. Let me come back. Oh, what is the sign answer or whoever's speaking trying to say? Now, the flower gave rise to what? A thought. Our mind likes the feeling of, that likes the thought. And so what does it do? It starts to go with this. Actually, what your mind is doing is actually useful to yourself. Why? It is giving you a place or a thing that you enjoy. When you're walking from here to the Dhamma Hall, do you remember about things you don't like? Most of the time, you remember what? Oh, after I go to Guru Ananda's sermon, I'm going to go do this, I'm going to go do that. And usually it's stuff that we enjoy thinking about that comes to us naturally. And so when you're doing something, things that you like comes to your mind. Is that not an opportunity? However, most of the time we think about this opportunity and we think, nope, and we push it down. We try to hide it, almost. Now, something that I really wanted to try to explain and talk about is, we all know, and you're here, myself, and every single monk, every single noble friend will always praise you, or always praise noble association. You've never heard that? Never heard about it? You know, we talk about how teachers and how important teachers are, and we talk about noble association, how important that is. Now, I was thinking, well, if you were surrounded by noble association, but you've never been given an advice, is that truly noble association? So you are surrounded by amazing people, but no one gives you advice. Are you associating noble associations? Because this is a question that I really want you to ask yourself. Am I someone who regularly gets advice from people, from others? Do people come up to me and say, excuse me, sir, excuse me, madam. Oh, I saw this. I saw you did this. I don't think it's right. Or maybe you should have done like this. How often does someone actually come to you and give you advice? Because if you say, okay, if I asked you, within the last week, except, in sermons, did you get more than, say, 7 pieces of advice in the last 7 days? Do you get at the very least, an advice from one person a day? If you can say yes, good. If your answer is no, actually, people rarely come up to me and tell me anything. then we have an issue. Do we not? People around you don't give you advice. Is that not a bad thing? If you think about it, it's terrible. It's being surrounded by noble association and not being able to associate. Now, so if you, in the last 7 days, if you haven't had 7 pieces of advice, that means there's something here we're doing wrong. There's something that we're not doing right. So today I want to give you the best piece of advice. I want to give you the best piece of advice. And if you do this, you will no longer need me to give you advice. And that advice is how to get advice. See, it's funny because it reminds me of a story of, you know, a fisherman. So there's a father and a child. And this child loves eating fish. So his father would always go and buy fish or get fish. And he's a fisherman, so he would go on his boat, spend the entire day to get his child fish. But one day he tells his child, "You're coming with me today. And I'm going to teach you how to fish." Why? Because when I'm gone, who's going to give you fish now? You have to learn how to fish. So I'm going to teach you how to get advice. And again, it's not mine. I'm nothing that I thought of. I'm actually taking this all off a teaching that not even the Buddha, the great Arhat Moggallana, had given to given to his noble associations. And I stumbled across it, and my teacher had told me to read about it. Because why? I want to know. What can I do is to get more advice? Because you hear stories about, you know, the venerable Rahula. Like he picks up a handful of sand, throws up in the air and says, "May by the end of today I get as many advice there is in my hand." I don't know about you, I've never got that many advice. I never had, you know, like if you took a handful of sand, how many sand grains do you think there are? 3, 4. There's probably like hundreds of them. That which pretty much means every single person that this venerable Rahula meets would give him some sort of advice. So I thought, I don't get that much advice. I would like to. Like there's some people who won't give me advice. Like you guys will give me advice, right? So I have to find a way to get advice. So I asked my teacher, and my teacher had given me this sutra. And it has been in, you know, the back burner for such a long time. Didn't really think about it until very recently. Someone had asked me a question. A small child asked me a question, like, "Sayinasa, no one gives me advice. No one gives me advice. No one really tells me what is right and what is wrong." And he gives a good analogy, right? Or good question. He says, either I'm an arahant, or people don't advise me. And so I again took this sutra out of the back burner and took a look at it. And I do have it here with me today. So I really do want to talk about this because this is something I feel that is very important. Again, if people don't give you advice, if your noble association is like being surrounded by such great people, but no one really gives you advice. Is there a point of that association? Now, the first thing you should realize, the problem's not with your association. It never was. The problem's with who? The problem with who? I think that's the first thing we should all realize. The reason why people may not give you advice as much as you would like to is not because of the other person. Like, they don't care. That's not the reason. Because if you are surrounded by noble association, they are not giving you advice because they care. How does that work? How do they not give advice because they care? Well, we'll go through this and we'll go through these examples as well. But I would like you to actually put this and ask you this question. Because at the end of the sutra, right, he gives a great analogy and he says, just like a young woman or a young man will stand in front of a mirror or a lake and look at oneself and check their face and say, I must get rid of this dirt or this dust, or there's a spot here or something that I have to get rid of. Just like a person looking at their reflection, looks at the imperfections and tries to fix it. Well, we should do that. Even if they look in the mirror and there's no imperfections, they should still look in the mirror, shouldn't they? Even if they say, oh, this is the best I can possibly do, they still have to look in the mirror before they can realize this. So this is why I want you to think about these. He gives 16 ways of, or 16 qualities that make you, he uses the word durvachana or durvacha. In other words, hard to be or difficult to give advice or difficult to point mistakes. So again, while I go through this, I want you to ask yourselves, and I'll give lots and lots of examples, as many examples I can possibly give, so you can avoid this, the 16. And not only that, I would like you, after today, to help anyone who has these 16. So for example, there'll be one that may say, maybe they get angry and they shout at others. Therefore, people find it hard to show their mistakes, to give them advice. Now, because you know that's one thing, I would like you to actually go to a person that you know and explain to them this. Because why? We want everyone around us to attain Nibbana. We want everyone around us to attain Nibbana, is it not? Do you not? Of course you do. So, it starts off with, thus have I heard, right? At one time, the Venerable Mahamoggallana was living in the deer park. And he addresses the monk thus. He says, "Avaso bhikkhus." And he says, "Monks." Now, remember, he's talking about who here? Monks. Why do you think he talks about monks? Why is he telling this to monks? Why not tell it to every single person? He's the devotees. Why not? You see, when they talk about monks here, they're not talking about a robe and a bald head. What are they talking about? The monk, what? Mentality. The monk mentality. So all those people who think, you know what, I have to attain Nibbana. What can I do to attain Nibbana? That is a monk mentality. Now, what is a monk and its mentality? You've heard before, and we may even go through this topic some other time. But for now, he talks about monks. Monks meaning people who are striving to attain Nibbana. And the monks replied to the Venerable Moggallana. He says, some people, a monk invites his faults to be pointed out and says, let the my noble associations advise me. I need to be advised by these noble associations. However, if he's a, again, the word that he uses is a durvacha. difficult to give advice. And he has traits that makes him difficult to be admonished. If he's impatient, intolerant, and doesn't take instructions or advice rightly, then his colleagues, his noble associations, would not give him advice or instruct him or think of him to be a person that can be trusted. And so Venerable Galana says, okay, so what are the qualities that makes one a duruachi, right? Or difficult to give advice. Now, if I was to ask you, what would you say? What sort of people do you find hard to help? What sort of people do you find hard to help? Now, the first thing I want to do is take you back in time when you went to school. Right? So some of you, it'll be, you know, not very far, a couple of months back. Some of you, it'll be a couple of years back. Some of you, it'll be decades back. But try to go back to time when you were in school. Do you remember, or, you know, toddlers, small young children, you know, they have this mindset of, you know, why, you know, I remember this very well. Usually, when it came to me and my siblings, whenever it came to one of their birthdays, my parents would have to buy the other two siblings something. It doesn't have to be big, it has to be something. So, for example, the birthday girl will get, something they want. The other two would get clothes or get chocolate or something. Why is that? Because what is this mindset the child has? Why does he get it? Why don't I get any? How are they praised? Why aren't I praised? For example, if today I come up and I talk about, say, one of you, and I say how great this person is, you know, he or she works very hard, and I've seen this, and I saw this. If in your mind you have this feeling, okay, they talk about him or her, what about me? I do all of that. I help other people. I practice the path. I sweep the Dhamma hall every morning and every evening. Why aren't I praised? Or simply put, you know, when sometimes you'll get this a lot, especially at your workplaces. None of you go to work, but in your workplaces or in schools, when someone starts to appreciate a group of people and say how well a group of people have done, and they start listing out names. You know, normally in say some events or functions, at the end they give a vote of thanks, right? And they say, firstly, I would like to thank so-and-so for doing such something like this. And I would also like to appreciate the work that X, Y, and Z have done. Sometimes, don't we have that feeling? Okay, and waiting for who? Waiting for whose name to be called out? And if they don't, how can they forget about me? Sometimes you don't want to be a main character. You just want to be in the background, you know, pulling the strings and helping the main character. However, at the end, your name must be where? In the credits. If not, oh, I do all of this, but they don't care. What is the point of me doing that then? Now, this is almost a childish, like a very low mindset, right? Now, it's almost selfish, self-centered, just like a small child. I don't know the exact translation, because I looked for it. The word lamaka, the word that comes to my head is childish. That's the first the word that comes to my head. But I'm no, I don't know much Sinhala, right? My Sinhalese is not perfect. But this is the idea that comes to me. So you're filled with these selfish views almost. And once you have these views and you are looking at the world using these views, people find you difficult to give advice. Because the first thing you need to have, the first thing you need to have for people to give you advice is you need to have, you know, almost a soft characteristic. Soft in the sense that, okay, people actually find you someone they enjoy to associate, they enjoy associating. For example, if you've ever taught a group of children, you will always find the children who listen to you, that you are more likely to what? Give advice and help them to become better people. Those are those who, you know, who are normally at the back of the classroom, who do whatever they want to do, right? Mess around, talk and do everything. The teacher at one point would actually think, no matter what I say, they're not taking. So what should I do? When they want to learn, let them learn. Until then, well, let them do whatever they want. So this is the first one. The first and foremost one is having these childish, and when I mean childish, I don't mean children are bad. Children are good. However, these childish behaviors of, you know, thinking about how I am not treated right and having these low behaviors, right? And having these almost evil wishes. So someone with these, this quality makes him a durvacha. In other words, difficult to give advice. So now I want you to actually think about your life. Think about if you have this quality, you know, of hoping that you get praise, of hoping that you get something. So when something good happens to another person, do you see that in a negative aspect, or see it as if, why did she get a chance? Why didn't I get that chance? Or why are they praised? Why can't I get a praise? And if you have this sort of mentality, this almost a hypocritic words, mentality, now people are finding it very hard to give you advice. Okay. Now, we all know one person, at least one person, who has a very, very big ego. No, we don't know of anyone who has an ego. When I say the word, a person with ego, a person probably came up to your head, right? Someone popped up and he said, this person, right? It's probably this person. Now, I want you to think about this, right? Someone who really thinks highly of themselves. Someone who thinks really highly of oneself. And puts others beneath them. For example, you see yourself, or you see yourself to be such a great person, a great human being. And other people, they're still coming there, still getting there. So let's take an example. See, I know most of you will not have this. But actually, in our minds, we still have this in a very small quantity, you know, thinking that you're better. For example, when someone younger than you, When someone younger than you comes up to you and says, excuse me, sir, excuse me, madam, excuse me, sayonara, excuse me, anagarika, anagarika, so and so. You know, I saw that you did this. Oh, you know, I saw that you were sweeping. And I think that is wrong. Now, what is the first feeling that we get when a small child comes up to us and says, you know, I saw something that you have done wrong. The first feeling that we get is, this child? What does this child know? I sweat because I wanted to get merits and I want to do this, I want to go that. But if you ask a child, why do you think it was wrong? He says, oh, it's because at this time you should have been doing this. You should have been, you should have helped prepare for the Buddha Puja, but you swept. That's wrong. And you immediately, if you had asked why, they'll give you a reason, but you automatically think, oh, I am older, I know more, what do they know? If I was to ask you, when was the last time a little child, when I mean little, someone many, many years younger than you, gave you advice, came up to you personally, and gave advice? If you say, yeah, I had that just yesterday, well done. If you have, if you can say, like, I've never had someone younger than me, right? Younger doesn't say 5, 10, 15 years younger than me, come up to me personally and give me advice. Why is that? Because they feel what? You are someone all the way up there. I am someone all the way down there. How can I give that person advice? Now, you can't say that, you know, that's impossible. No young child will come up to me and give me advice. That's not possible, can it? However, we all know the story of who? Venerable Sariputta. The great venerable, the great elder Sariputta, what happened? As he was walking, the corner of his robe was touching the floor. A small 7-year-old Samanera monk, who, for argument's sake, will say, is not an arahant, goes up to the great elder and says, venerable sir, your robe is on the floor, touching the floor. Now, I want you to realize what he does after he takes the advice. Does he go and say, good monk, and tap him on his head? Thank you very much, and stroke his head. Is that what he does? He puts his hands together and says what? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you so much for showing me this mistake. And not only that, he fixes the mistake there and then and asks, is this okay? I mean, think about how low he has. Now, again, an arahant doesn't have ego. I agree. An arahant doesn't have pride or ego. But think about how low he had to, how low he places himself. He goes with the flow of what? Nature. So what? When this small child, because if he had gone and told this child, good monk, and tapped him on his head, what does the small monk think immediately? I am such a, you know, I am low compared to this great person. How can I give him more advice? That's not possible. See, even when someone gives you advice, see if you actually put them lower than you. Or simply, someone you consider your equal. Now, I know something that it used to really get me annoyed. Is when someone comes up to you and asks, Like, are you contemplating? You know, you should be contemplating. And you're like, and you think, I was contemplating until you asked me this question. Like, why are you asking? Are you suggesting I'm not contemplating right now? Is that what you're suggesting? I was contemplating. And immediately you think, no, I'm contemplating, right? You think, why are you asking me this? Because immediately you think that when they ask this question, or they give you advice and say, are you contemplating? You immediately put them up and you put yourself down and you think, no, that can't be. We are our equals. So you and me. Someone says, you know, at 2 o'clock, you will have a Guru Handra's Deshana. Guru Handra Sermon. Immediately you have the feeling of what? To say something, right? To say at least, yes, 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 at 2 o'clock, I know, 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock. You are showing the other person that you know. Oh, I know, it's 2 o'clock, it's 2 o'clock, the sermon's at 2 o'clock. However, when you say, oh, I know, and da da da, the other person, again, look at it in the other person's point of view. Oh, they know. They know everything. So, for example, if you have a sermon, say at 1:30, right, for half an hour, Dorongan Dhammajivanasa comes down and he's doing a sermon for half an hour. Now, will they want to tell you about that sermon? You know, right? You know at 2 o'clock it's Guru Har Sermon, so you must know also that at 1:30 you have another sermon. But they don't want to give you that advice, because why? Again, you make them feel as though you know, and they don't. So again, in our lives, do we have these moments where when people give us advice, or not even, forget about giving advice, in general, do you feel that you are above others? Do you feel that you are greater than others? So when someone younger than you comes and talks to you, do you put yourself above them? Now, this is when we talk about even the order of seniority. This, what do you call it? The Sangma Pilavada. One person's above, the other person's below. This is a blessing, but also a what? Curse. You know, I came to the monastery yesterday. How can I give advice to someone who has been in this monastery for 3 years, 4 years? This is why Guru Handra and everyone would say to be like a child. To be like a child with everyone around you, to be like a child. Because why? You know how lucky it is to be a young child? For example, do you know how lucky it is to become a noble heart? Right? You know, our noble heartians. Because if they do anything wrong, not just the monks, not just the anagarikas, not just the anagarikas, but also you all will say something about it. You all would say whatever. So you would say that, you know, Buddha, you shouldn't be doing that. And you would also advise. But let's say, when was the last time you went to someone your senior, in seniority order, and gave them a piece of advice? When was the last time you went to an anagarika? Anagarika, and gave them a piece of advice. When was the last time you went to a monk and you gave them a piece of advice? You see, this is a blessing and a curse. That's why with whoever you're with, be a child. Be a child. Unless you're the teacher. If you're the teacher, don't be a child, please. Right? Be the responsible person. But until then, if you're not the teacher there, be the child so others feel like they can give you advice. Trust me, if someone younger than you comes up and gives you advice, know that you have won. If someone younger than you comes up and gives you advice, know that you have done an amazing accomplishment. You've accomplished something amazing. Because that's not easy. Having someone younger than you come and give you advice, and they feel so open, you are so open that they know that they can give you advice and nothing's going to happen. That's the thing. Now, I want to talk about the nature of the mind as well. You know, if you get angry, now, when I mean angry, I don't mean like a, you know, like red in the face, smoke coming out of your ears, fire in your eyes sort of anger. I don't ever mean that, because the chances of us being like that angry is like once in a blue moon. Will you ever get so angry? Especially at the monastery. However, none of you can say that within the last week, that you felt no sort of anger whatsoever. Anger doesn't only mean being like angry with someone. It could be being really upset or disappointed. You see, when the mind has this nature of being angry, for example, now, think of someone that you know to have a short temper. So when I say a person with a short temper, that, you know, the person that comes to your head, how reluctant are you to give that person advice? Because what it's like, it's like trying to defuse a bomb. Do you think it's easy? Just cut the red wire and it'll go away, right? That's what you do. You cut the red wire to defuse a bomb. Do you think it's that easy? Like, I don't know. Like, there are millions or thousands of people who train to be in a bomb squad to be able to defuse a bomb with minimal damage. And they have to wear full armor. And there, trust me, in bomb squads, you don't get scissors to cut wires. They try to either destroy the internal mechanisms using like something like water, or they have a controlled explosion because there's no wire they can cut. So if you have to be able to defuse a bomb is difficult. What is more difficult is defusing a what? A timed bomb. Because you know it's going to go off. You're just waiting for what? When? So if you have this anger, if you're angry by nature, like if you are someone who gets really angry and you're covered in hatred and anger all the time, well, trust me, no one would actually want to give you any sort of advice. Now, something that I know our teachers do, right? Our teachers are amazing in every aspect. But I know something they do is they'll go to an individual, their student, And sometimes what they'll do is actually, for no reason whatsoever, tell you off. So, for example, you're just walking down on the path and your teacher may come up to you and go, why did you do this? Or they'll blame you for a mistake in front of others. But they'll do this very carefully while looking at what? You know, the mirror to your soul. What's that? The face. Why is that? Because when something happens and if you change your facial expressions, people don't want to, you know, ruin your. We want to see people smile. Agree? We don't want to see people angry or sad or upset, right? So, if I was to give you advice and your smile turns into a frown, tomorrow would I want to give you advice? Will I ever want to give you advice? But if your smile continues to stay a smile, now what? Everyone around you would give you advice. And you can see this. So for example, there are people that I know, you know, that you can go up to them and tell them absolutely anything and they won't be upset. Like for example, coming back to your school years, there are people that your teachers can literally scream at. Right? But they will always keep a smile on their face. That's not because there's anything like they are incapable of knowing that the teacher is screaming at them. No, it's because they are okay with it. And therefore, people are more likely to give advice if they know when they give advice, you are happy. You want the advice. So your teacher will do this. Will they do it now or will they do it in a couple years? That's your teacher's choice. But I know teachers do this. Because why? I'm telling you this firsthand. With firsthand experience. Because why? They'll do this and check your face. Ah, he frowns. What can I do to help? That's you, because your teacher is always trying to help you. But if it's someone beside you, the person on your left or right, if they see you frown, they don't want to give you advice again. Now, the next one is very interesting as well. Grudges. Someone says, madam, sir, you know, you did something wrong. If they see that you are holding that against them, and so, for example, let's say you're sweeping. You've got a broom and you're sweeping the mall. Someone comes up and says, Mahatmya, right, or madam, sir, you're sweeping wrong. And he's like, here, let me show you. And you give them the broom and they show you how to sweep. If the next day, right, they say you're discussing amongst yourself what you want to do for your merit work, and you say, you know they're near you, the person who gave you advice, and you say, I can't sweep. You know, I can't sweep. And even in a joking manner, that person will obviously think what? They're still holding this. They're still holding this, and what they're doing is they're holding it against me. We all know about hypocrites, right? Hypocrites. they'll say one thing and they'll do the complete opposite. So they'll say, you know, don't lie, and the next moment they'll start lying. Now, obviously, not everyone remembers what they say. Sometimes people will help another person even though they have that mistake. But if they do and you point it out to them. So for example, they say, sir, madam, you know, you shouldn't really be talking about this. You should be talking about anicca dukkhanatta. And the next moment you see them talk about something else. And you say, you know, sir or madam, you should be talking about anicca dukkhanatta too. You know, when we say like, when someone gives, like, it's almost like, I don't know the English translation to these words, right? So you have to help me. You know, they say, it's almost like in a joking manner, they demean the other person. But you know what I mean? So you're doing this in a way to subtly hurt the other person. In a very subtle way. And that itself is something that makes the other person think, oh, maybe not. This quality makes the other person, the person who's getting the advice, so what? Durvacha, or someone who's difficult to give advice, difficult to admonish. Someone who is very difficult. Now, those qualities so far actually have nothing to do with when given advice. This is talking about your nature in general. So if your nature is to hurt other people, you get angry and you hurt them, right? You hold grudges against others. They don't need to give you advice. If you have these qualities so far, people already are reluctant. They don't need to even try. They automatically think, maybe not. Because if one of your fellow anagarikas, sila shravikas, sila who has these fellow monks, sees a mistake of yours and does not tell you, are you in noble association now? Do you currently have noble association now? No. Like being surrounded by living in paradise, but internally in hell. Again, if you're someone who commits bad deeds, if you're someone who has a tendency to do bad things, so for example, if you have a tendency to go and hurt another person, to go and steal, to go and commit bad deeds. When is the last time you went to a thief and said, excuse me, sir or madam, don't steal? When is the last time you did that? Did you ever go to a thief and said, don't steal to them? No, because you are scared of what they will do to you. But again, noble associations aren't always scared. They are compassionate to you, because what would you do to yourself? Because if you have the tendency to commit bad actions, or if you have the tendency to say, you get really angry and you say something. Like we all know, in our, you know, every saint has a past, right? So in our past, we all know that when we get angry, we say and do things that we later think, I should have said that. I think that was too harsh. And if I could go back in time, what? I would get rid of it. I wouldn't have done that. So we know when we're angry, we do things and say things that we later regret. So when you are angry, see, so far we've talked about when you are angry, don't say anything out of anger. When you are angry, don't do anything out of anger. When you are angry, don't hold it against another person. these three so far are talking about when you are angry, don't release your anger. Now, you'll realize that this sutra, right, is a catch-22. It truly is a catch-22. Because to get rid of anger, you need what? The Dhamma and advice. Actually, to get rid of anger, the Dhamma is not enough. The Dhamma is not enough. Because the Dhamma is only one part of this equation. The other part is your association and your practice. So, you get angry. Therefore, no advice. No advice, you don't find out how to get out of anger, how to stop being angry. It's a catch-22. So, here's the thing. We have to break this cycle. So, again, just like the young man or woman looks in the mirror and checks, like he checks their face to see if there's anything, any imperfections. Always check, do I have this? And when I get angry, do I show it to other people? And do I show it and does it make them feel like they cannot give me advice? If so, okay. Now this and the next one is something that you've heard in sermons. When someone gives you advice, even if you haven't done it, what should you do? What should you do? Don't steal. Now, I'm hoping everyone here doesn't steal. Fingers crossed. Don't steal. Now, when I give advice of something that you don't do, what should you do? I don't steal. You... Sorry, Nanza, are you okay? I haven't stolen for the last, you know, X amount of years. I haven't taken anything of anyone's. Like, why are you telling me not to steal? If someone is accusing you of something, and if you stand firm and you say, nope, I haven't done this, so it's not something I haven't done. Again, the next time, will the person again give you advice? I think, I can't remember who told me this, but someone gave a really good analogy for this. Have you all been shopping? You all been shopping? And you got the trolley and going, I don't know, Kios, right? Or, I don't know about places. You're going through these superstores with the trolley. Do you buy everything in the shops? Do you buy everything in the shop? So you're passing this, you're going through this trolley, and you see, I don't know, you have no pets, but you put dog food inside. Right? You don't have any small children, but you put Pampers and diapers inside. And you go, every aisle you go through, you empty. You take one of everything. Is that how shopping works? I don't know, I haven't been shopping in years. Is that how shopping works? No, right? What, how does shopping work? You take a trolley, you walk through, you pass everything. And you take some things. So should we start scolding the shops for selling Pampers? I don't need Pampers. Why do you have Pampers in your store? You should only have bread and milk and... What else do you buy in stores? Bread, milk, soap in stores. We don't need any dog food. We don't need any Pampers or diapers. We don't need any. Why do you have those in store? Is there a store entirely dedicated to you. You go past, the clothing aisle. Do you buy every single t-shirt or trouser or whatever on the lines? And do you start scolding the manager for putting such a terrible design on a t-shirt? No, you buy what you need and you leave. You take it, you buy and you leave. Same thing with giving advice. You take what you want. The remainder is still in the shop. So one day, if you do get a dog, right, just one day, happen to get a dog, now the dog food is useful. Now you can go back to the store and take the dog food and give it to your dog. But if you don't have a dog, there's no point of blaming the shop for having dog food. Same thing with advice. You should never accuse the accuser. You should never advise the advisor. Because by doing that, you're not doing yourself any good. What you're doing is you're stopping them from giving you any more advice in the future. You've not done it, it doesn't matter. They say to treat advice like it was treasure. Treat advice as though it's treasure. So take it with both hands. Don't steal. Ehmai. I will never steal again. Don't buy dog food. Ehmai. I am going to buy dog food. But when you have a dog, now you can buy dog food. So when you need to steal, I remember someone gave me advice. Don't steal. See, this is why. Take it like a treasure. We take the treasure with both hands. The more you're able to praise the person who's given you the advice, the more likely they'll do it again. So there are great examples. Especially I get to meet and I get to associate amazing people. And there's a certain monk that comes to my head, right? Who, no matter what you do, no matter what you say, will find a way to praise you. I mean, it's insane how he does it. Let's say you're just walking. He'll find something to say to praise you. And it's not flattery. He's not lying, right? He's not trying to make you. He's not doing it in spite or trying to make you or like him or nothing. He's just doing it because he sees its value, and therefore lots of people actually do come up to him and actually try to help him say. So, for example, if you show him his mistakes from that day onwards. He would thank you for the next month for giving you that. And you automatically feel, he enjoys this and he likes receiving advice. Let me go and give him another one. You automatically feel that. Because why? We're not talking about people here. Because if we're talking about people, if I was to start this sermon and say, okay, everyone give everyone an advice and take everyone's advice and then leave. Would the entire world start to change? Would I be able to solve all world problems by saying, don't do this and do this and leave? No, because we're talking about minds. Minds need views. So when someone gives you advice, take it with both hands and accept it, no matter what they say. Don't hold firm and think, I did not do this. Now, This is the thing. I can tell you all to do this, but I can't tell the same thing to everyone. You're in a court case. Should I tell the prosecutor to accept everything? Should I tell, you know, that, you know, just accept everything they say? You murdered. Mm-hmm. You lied. Mm-hmm. You cheated. Mm-hmm. You're sentenced to 100 years in jail, lifetime worth in jail. I can't tell that to them, but I can tell this to you. Because we don't need whether we go to jail or not. As long as we have noble association, that's all that matters. For us, at least. Now, when someone gives you advice, never, and I repeat, never, give them an advice back. Never give them an advice back. At that moment, so they say, oh, you're sweeping wrong. Oh, thank you. Oh, you know, your patkada is in the wrong place. You should put it. Don't do that. Yes, they have given and so they have to receive. But if when they have given and you are trying to give back to them, the reason why you are trying to give advice back to them is not because you want to help them. It's because you feel as though you've been put down. That you've been pushed to the floor and they're so much better than you. And so you want to equal the playing field. So you say, you know, I saw the other day that this happened. I don't think that should. Whenever you get advice, take it. Just take it. Like I said, take it with both hands. Whether the other person is at fault. So they say, you know, your patkada is in the wrong place. And if they're, and you see their patkada is also in the wrong place, don't show it to them. Not then and there. Maybe after a day or two, after you fix yours and you ask them, you know, for the last 2 days, you can even say, like, you know, 2 days ago you gave me this advice to wear this patkada properly. Am I wearing it properly now? Now, what are you doing? You are asking for their advice. Therefore, you're putting yourself down. And if you're doing it right, they'll say, yeah, you're doing, yes, perfect, well done. If you're doing it wrong, then they'll again correct you. Then you can say, however, Mahatmi, like, I think maybe both of us have to try to do this days after. Because if you do it immediately, the thing is, trust takes years to build, seconds to break, and forever to repair. Sometimes, once you break a person's, when I mean trust, I mean their ability to give you advice. Sometimes, because it takes time. Trust me, to be scolded by Guru Hanuru takes time. Takes a lot of time. Because Guru Hanuru would never scold, you know, someone he doesn't feel can. So for example, he would advise anyone he meets. But you know how, like, even the Buddha himself, he would call someone, like, say, Potila Hanuru, and he calls him Tuccha. He wouldn't have done that if he thought that this is not going to help him in any sort of way. So being told off by Guru Hanuru, like, when I mean told off, I mean, like, really, really told off. It takes lots of time. It takes time for him to understand, oh, okay, if I was to call him, let's take an example, let's say, he comes and he says, taking an English word now. That makes it sound rude. Let's say he says, "Why are you doing that stupid thing? Like, are you a fool?" And he's saying that so to help you improve here, right? But if you are unable to accept it, unable to you know, take it, because why? You get upset. So he would take, it takes time for him to do that. But after he knows that you're okay, no matter what he says, he will say, "Okay, why are you being a fool and doing this? Instead, shouldn't you be going to the Valley Madhava and meditating?" But if one day you really become upset with that, now for Guru Hanuman to again give you the same sort of advice in the same manner would take much longer. Because why? Trust takes years to build, seconds to break, and forever to repair. So this is the thing. Although you may not be given advice now, by changing all these so far, people will start to give you advice. But once they start giving advice, don't change. Keep at it. If you do change, what is the likelihood that they're going to continue to give you advice? We don't know. We don't know. Now, for the next one, I want to give you a story, something that I used to do. I remember sometimes for certain classes, right? So, for example, I'll give you an example, a real life example. I remember when I was growing up in the UK and I was learning, I had to go to tuition. And I had to go to an English tuition, and I had lots of homework. I had lots and lots of homework. And I remember very, very well that I hadn't done the homework. I hadn't done the homework. And I know that I haven't done it. And she's going to ask me. And when she asks me, I know I'm going to say I haven't done it. And she's going to be really upset with me. And X, Y, and Z. So what do I do? When she asks me, "Where is your homework?" What I say is, "Oh, I have it here, but miss, didn't you have an injury in your hand last week? Like, I remember you had a cast on your wrist. Is your wrist okay?" And what does she think? "Oh, this child cares about me. Oh, yes, child, like, you know, I sprained my wrist the other day. Now it's getting better. I still can't bend my fingers properly." And she thinks what? That I'm doing it because I care. I'm doing it, get up, doing homework, right? And the funny thing is, she forgets. After she gives me the story, she forgets. And she's like, "Where were we?" "Oh, we're talking about this extract that we have to go through." And she's like, "Ah, okay." And now she reads this extract. I got out doing homework many times like this with various different teachers. But here it says, what? By doing that, you won't be... Understandably, because of this, I didn't learn much in lessons. Because why? I'm trying to evade doing homework, and children and adults alike, we all hate homework, however we know its importance. We know its importance. And so by not doing it, you're not doing any good to yourself. Now, the actual idea that comes to me with this is, you know, someone asks you, "Why did you do this?" Let's take an example. "Last Sunday, why did you not come to the program?" Oh no, let's say, right. You didn't come to the program last Sunday. So your teacher comes and asks you, or someone comes and asks you, Why didn't you come to the monastery or this program last Sunday? Like, you should be coming to the monastery every week, or else this and that and this and that. Now think, do you have an excuse that comes to your head? And do you tell them of this excuse? Do you say, you know, Mahatmya, like, I got very sick, right? And this happened and that happened. I broke my arm, but it's okay now. And do you give an excuse? Do you give a story? Now, this story may not be to evade the question or to evade to change the subject. But what you're doing is you're giving an excuse. By giving an excuse, what is the accuser or what is the person trying to give you advice what are they going to think? There's no point. No matter what I say, what are they going to do? They're going to say, I did this for this reason, that reason, this reason. Now, I remember this very well because this is something that's actually happened to me. I used to be someone who used to give excuses. I was the Lord of excuses. The Lord of excuses. Trust me. Whenever my teachers tell me, like, okay, can you do this? I would say yes. And when they ask me, have you done this? You know, that day, I had to, I'm not even lying. There's no lie here. It was just me giving an excuse of why I couldn't do it. Oh, it's because I had to help this person. This person got sick, and so I had to take them to the medical and give excuses. Second day, I've been told to do something. Second day, come back with excuses. Third day, excuses. Fourth day, excuses. And I remember so well that my teacher was like, come back to me when you run out of excuses. When you run out of excuses, come back. Until then, it seems like you don't need me. And that day, I think I was shocked to the core. Right? As in, there was nothing more shocking. I don't think even a horror film can shock me that much. I was shocked because I thought, wait, I'm just telling them why I couldn't do it. I could have done it, but this is why I couldn't. Now you realize that by giving an excuse, what you're telling the teacher is, I couldn't be bothered. I had better stuff to do. So I did that. I didn't do what you did. Okay, tell me something else now. And you're saying that, oh, I don't want your advice, but give me advice. In other words, you give me something, I'm not gonna do it. However, please tell me something. Please tell me something to do. And what is that doing? Motivating your teacher to say, okay, next do this. Your teacher will be once, twice, three times. And then, I've seen this happen as well. You tell the student the same thing over and over again. One week they come up and they say, you know, you should do this. Next week, for example, you have to, on our journey to on this path, Nibbana, you should really go to the Buddha Kutiya and chant the Buddha Guna for at least 15 minutes a day. Next week, they ask you, were you able to? Or can you mark it down on a sheet? And then say, where's the sheet? You give the sheet and they find out you've only done 1 or 2 days. They ask, oh, you weren't able to do it? You know, on your path to Nibbana, right? You should really go to the Buddha Kutiya and chant the Buddha Guna Sajjayana for at least 15 minutes. Next week, the same thing. Next week, the same thing. The next week, the same thing over and over again until you get it done. So if your teachers are on the repeat with you, if they're repeating the same advice over and over again, understand there's something going wrong here. You're not doing what they say. You are making an excuse. You are making an excuse. By doing this, you're not helping yourself. You are actually disencouraging your teacher from helping you. So if you want advice, stop giving excuses. Stop giving stories. Stop trying to change the subject. Just because you made a mistake, it's okay. Accept it. Don't change the subject. For example, a group of you have done something wrong. See, for example, a group of you, instead of going to a sermon, instead goes and, see, because you go and do a merit when you're not supposed to. Right? Your teacher comes and blames you. If you go and say, oh, well, it wasn't just me, it was this person, this person, this person, this person. What you are doing is what? You're trying to evade the problem. You're trying to direct the problem somewhere else. So why? To reduce the intensity here. Oh, five of you did it. Oh, then it's okay. Then I have to get all five of you and blame you all together. Instead, what? Take it. Don't give advice. Don't give excuses. So what? You were told off for something. So it's not something that, you know, it's gonna, again, you're going through that shop. Do you buy everything in the shop? Do you buy everything in the shop? No, if you see a bag of chocolates, you take the chocolates. You see a bag of karavila, you don't take that. Because why? When you go through the shop, you take what you want. You don't take everything. So take it. Okay. So these are all when someone gives you advice, what you shouldn't do. Right? Never tell the other person that you haven't done it. Never tell the other person that you haven't done it. Again, back to the thing. If someone tells you, yesterday I saw you stealing, you shouldn't really be stealing. Never tell them that you haven't done it. Keep quiet. So what? Because understand, your teacher will love to hear, or would feel so greatly about you if they have blamed you for something that they thought that you have done, and they find out afterwards that you haven't done it, but you kept quiet. You accepted it. Because why? It's teacher's advice. What's more precious than teacher's advice? What's more precious than advice by your peers, by your noble association? What's more precious than that? So again, think about these. Think about these qualities so far. Do I have these? Have I ever done these? Now, I am giving very big examples. Big examples meaning in the more extreme aspects. However, this is not just all this. In one simple mind, these can happen. And if these do happen, do you think people, or do you think other minds will? Because it's like a magnet. If I had any sort of metal, do metals attract metals? Can metals ever attract metals? Not unless you magnetize it. Once you have a magnet, now, can you stop other metals coming to you? Can a magnet decide to turn off? A permanent magnet. Can a permanent magnet decide to turn off? I'm not going to be a magnet now, but tomorrow morning from 6 to 6, I'll be a magnet. After 6 o'clock? No. I'm going to turn off my magnet and go back home. A magnet can't turn it on and off. But once it's a magnet, it attracts all of this. I don't know if you... I think you may have all experienced this, right? It's when you're with a group of people. And let's say you're having a conversation. And say you are in a group of three and you're talking about something in a group of three. A fourth person comes along. sometimes your conversation changes. Never happened? You're talking with these three people and the fourth person comes along. Sometimes your conversation completely changes. For example, let's say you're talking about, yesterday I had this amazing cheesecake. It was amazing and delicious. And then say, great example, say Nayakandra comes by. It was so, it's, you know, because of the causes, does it manifest? Like the cheesecake is a manifestation of the causes. You know, when all the causes come together, do we have a manifestation? Why is that? Because what? Nayakandra is a magnet for what? He's a magnet. Do you think anyone goes up to him and says, Nayakandra, yesterday I had this amazing chocolate cake. It was so delicious. Like Nayakandra, if you were there, right? You would have had so much as well. Do you think anyone goes to Nayakandra and says that? What do you think he mostly hears? You know, Nayakandra, like I was thinking about this chocolate, or I had this chocolate cake, and you know, I felt so pleasurable. And then I contemplated like this. Or help me how to contemplate. Do you see how the conversation completely changed because of what? Because of the qualities of this mind. Sometimes you may even be having a very like virtuous conversation. You may be talking about, the other day I saw person X, and this person X, you know, was such a great person because she or he did Y. And when the fourth person joins, sometimes you may even change and stop there and then. Not because you're talking about that person, but because it doesn't feel right. The environment itself changes. Sometimes, you know, when the extra person joins, the environment also changes. It starts to rain. Never happened? Or it starts to become very dark and gloomy. Never happened? It does, because why? This is talking about environments. So we have to create this environment, this magnet for advice. We have to create this magnet for advice. So ask yourself, so far, am I doing these things? If I am, what can I do to stop it? Because remember, this is a catch 22. This is a catch 22. The chicken wants to cross the road. And on the other side of the road, it's school. There's a school that teaches the chicken how to cross the road. Will the chicken ever cross the road? Same conundrum here. You need advice to attain Nibbana and to get rid of these bad qualities. By getting rid of these bad qualities, will you be able to get advice? And this is what we call a positive feedback loop. This is a positive. Let me explain this. These are two squares, but they seem more rectangular. These are the qualities. This is advice. Somehow the cycle starts. Advice will give qualities. Qualities will give advice. Advice will give qualities. Qualities gives advice. Advice gives qualities. Qualities gives. And this will now spiral and spiral outwards. This will continue. Now qualities will forever increase and the amount of advice will forever increase. That's why the Venerable Rahula was able to throw up a handful of sand with probably hundreds of grains, thousands of grains, and get so much. Because why? He has lots of what? Qualities. This is a positive feedback loop. So it somehow has to start. Unfortunately, it has to start. Normally, it has to start. Either some random person has to give you advice, right? Just like, you know, blindly, like someone throws a dart, and decides to give you some advice. Or you have to increase your qualities. You have to get rid of these negative ones and take the opposite ones. Now again, right? Being someone who is really mean, who likes, Now here's a good one. If someone feels as though everyone is like them, someone with very low amount of virtues decides everyone is like me. Everyone is the same like me, and so what you're doing is you because you have little virtues and you are really mean here. You're really rude. If you're someone who's really mean and rude, and you think that everyone around you is the same like you. What you are doing is you are making people, again, you are repelling other magnets. What you're doing is you're repelling other magnets, because why? Only like can attract like. Only like can attract like. If this is why, birds of a feather flock together, right? This is why in schools you see a bunch of groups of people who have similar qualities. Or the sporty people are in one corner, or the so-called cool kids are in the other corner, the nerds are on the other, and the others are enough. And you have these group of people because why? Qualities attract qualities. And so if you have a rude quality, if you are someone who's always rude, who always tries to hurt another person, you are repelling other magnets. Therefore, you won't get the advice from them. So you have to relate. You have to change to be a person who is nice and kind. Again, coming back to where you started, we need a soft mindset. Not something that's hard and brittle. Someone that is soft and malleable. And then people are more likely to help. You give toddlers clay, right? You give toddlers clay to play with. Anyone give toddlers a hammer and a chisel to chisel away and make a sculpture out of stone? Anyone? No, you give them clay. Why? Because clay is so easy to mold. Have you seen these really massive Buddha statues made out of entire just rock? Do you think it was easy? Every single time I see these statues, the first thing that comes to my head is, what happens if they made a mistake? Do you think they take it and they put glue and stick it back on? If they make a mistake, they make a mistake. That's why rocks are hard to sculpt. But something like clay, so easy. Even toddlers can do it. Whereas rock sculpting, you need at least 10, 20 years of experience. So if you're mean and spiteful and if you're someone who, again, is rude to another person, you're repelling these magnets. Again, if you're someone who always thinks about yourself, if you have selfish attributes, what am I getting? Well, okay. Why is everyone not doing what I want? Why can't they do what I want? If you are always someone who's thinking about themselves and not about the people around them, simply put, why am I not getting any advice? He got advice, she got advice, why can't I get advice? Even that itself is what? Thinking about yourself. Selfish. Because we all know, to be able to receive advice, what do you need? What do you need? To give advice. To give advice. Again, in what way do you have to give advice? You know, I'm such a great person. You know, you're such a bad person. You know, you're sweeping wrong. I'm such a great person. You're such a bad person. You know, your path good is wrong. I'm such a great person. You're such a bad person. You know, you have hair sticking out. Is that the way you should give advice? The best way to give advice is to fall below the person, understanding that they are someone who is much more virtuous than you. Think of it as though you're giving advice to an arahant. How would you advise an arahant? Hey, your robe's on the floor. Oh, yeah. You're walking awkward. How would you give advice? Excuse me. Can I show a small mistake that you're making? You know. When you're walking, your feet is going, you're waddling than walking. You have to, I think it's wrong. I may be wrong, but because what are you doing? You are showing that I am below you. Please. Take this if you want. If you don't want, don't. But you would do as much as you, do it if you can. Now, don't expect your teachers to do this, huh? Don't expect your teachers to go like, "Excuse me, Mahatmya, right? Excuse me, madam. I think you're contemplating wrong. I may be wrong, right? You know, it's not nitya sukha atta, it's anitya dukkha anatta. You know, I might be wrong." Don't expect your teachers to do this. Your teachers will do what? Your teachers will tell you there and then, this is wrong. But I'm talking about the other noble associations, the people who aren't bound to give you advice. The people who aren't, you know, almost needed by law, by monastery law, to give you advice. I'm talking about your associations, the people around you. The five people you associate, do they give you advice? Something that you realize, sometimes when you start giving advice, people will start to, you know, not like to associate. For example, let's say you're with these three friends and you're talking about yesterday's chocolate cake. Or, you know, yesterday the dal curry was amazing, just about right. Just enough sugar, not sugar, salt, right? But then if you were at that moment to say, you know, I don't think we should be talking about this. Because I don't think this is what, say for example, this is not what Nayaka wants us to talk about. This is not what our teachers want us to talk about. You'll realize that those associations will start at distance. Your unknowable or you can't call them immoral, but your not noble associations will start at distance. But your noble associations will come closer. But here's the thing, something that we have to realize. When we talk about noble association, what are we actually talking about? People? You know, this Mahatmya is a noble association, that Mahatmya is not. Are we talking about people here? Because there is no noble person. There's only what? Noble minds. So one day that noble association of, you know, one person may not be there when the next day. Sometimes, say for example, in this group of friends, right, or group of your close friends, you're talking about, say, this chocolate cake. Sometimes it's best not to talk about the Dhamma. But afterwards, after the conversation has ended, the next day, the day after, start talking about Dhamma. Why? if you were someone who people see always, no matter what when he or she opens the mouth, the first word that comes out is anicca. Some people may not like to associate. And that could be because they may feel that you have this idea that you're better than them, that you know more dhamma than them. Therefore, that's why you're always talking about anicca. They don't know about anicca. So again, are you making them feel like that? If so, you're not going to get advice from them, are you? You know, everyone here, probably most of you, I think, almost all of you, have these nyaya discussions, right? Yes, most of you, or if not all of you. When someone gives, say you have a good idea, you have an amazing idea, and you're saying, this duster is anicca, let's say, and you're now explaining to the rest of your audience that this duster is anicca. Now, if someone says, madam, you know, when you say the duster is anicca, aren't you separating the duster from everything else? And you're like, I am, aren't I? However, you don't like being what? You don't like being wrong. Yes, Mahatmi, that's exactly what I meant. When I said this duster, what I was trying to say is, you know, it's separate from what's separate. This duster's not separate. And you now try to, give, again, excuses, saying that I was right. Now, that person may realize that, okay, you understood that, but will they ever help you again? Let's say you have nyaya discussions, and at the end, you couldn't answer any questions. I couldn't answer any questions? Will everyone go look at you and say, like, honey, they spent how many years in the monastery and they can't answer a question? And we may become upset. I couldn't answer that question. I should have answered that question. But does it matter? Whether you can answer a question or not, doesn't matter. Actually, it doesn't. Why? Does everyone need to know around you that you have a Dhamma understanding, a full comprehension of the Dhamma? Does everyone need to see that? You know, if you talk to this Mahatya, he'll tell you anicca from the start to the very end. You listen to that, you become an arahant. Do you want others to think of you like that? Or do you want them to think of you as a genuine person? That, okay, he couldn't answer a question. That's okay. Because now what's going to happen is, those people who are listening to your sermon, your discussion, they want to do what now? They want to do what now? Give advice. What? Do you think they're going to be like, this person doesn't understand anicca. Let me forget about them and let me focus on the other people around. This person doesn't know about anicca. Let me talk to others. No, if they think that you don't understand, the first person in their mind that they want to help is who? You. So what? So what if you can't answer questions? So what if they think your idea is wrong? Oh, you thought that this is anicca. So what? Let them help you. See, we have to continue to increase our qualities. And then we can increase the amount of advice. Again, if in the last 7 days, 7 people haven't given you 7 different advices, sorry, 7 different pieces of advice, there's something wrong. Because if Venerable Rahula was able to throw a handful of stand up and say, may I get all these, as many grains of sand there are in this in my hand, may I get this many advice? If he was able to say that, why don't we? Why still don't we get so much advice? Because why? We need more what? Qualities. We need to change these negative qualities that we have inside of us. So again, if you are someone who is very deceitful, you try to trick the other person. You know what they call it? They call it you can smooth talk your way out of something. So for example, let's say you are asked to sweep the dhammo. You're told to sweep the dhammo. You don't like sweeping. So what do you do? What do you do? An old person will go and say, I don't want to sweep. Can someone else sweep? But what do people who are very cunning and deceitful do? What do? They do a terrible job and pretend it was good. Why? So for example, they asked to sweep the dhammo. Instead of sweeping the dhammo, they just, I don't know, do a very half-hearted job and make sure that there's dust everywhere. Why is that deceitful? Because now other people think that, this person can't sweep. I want to say, one of your fellow Anagarikas, whoever, they say, I left my bag in under the hut. Can you bring it for me? You very well know what bag they have, but instead you go bring someone else's bag. Is this yours? Why do you do that? Why would someone do that? So, they don't ask you again. I mean, that's smart. That's thinking another level. However, that's deceiving. Now, will the person ever want to help you now? Because they realize that, okay, you don't want to do it. You are now deceiving. You say you have some merit work, right? There were people, right? They're no longer like this, that I know, right? So in the monastery, we have two very focused merit days, right? Where most of us will actually do lots of merits, and that'll be Mondays and Tuesdays. I know someone who will get sick every Sunday. Every Sunday. I remember when I was going to school, right? I remember we used to go every Saturday. We had dhamm parcel, right? And I, for one, did not like the dhamm parcel, right? Because there's so much homework, and the teachers were always very strict. Because why? They're uncles and aunties, and you can't say anything to them. I remember it was on Saturday. I remember every Friday after school, I would come home with a stomach ache. I'd be like, I got this stomach ache, right? You know, I think maybe a fever is coming up as well. And Amma would check. And literally, like after dinner, I'll be like, Amma, I feel sick. And then I'll pretend or kind of pretend to like take it all out. And I'll be like, Amma, I'm really sick. Like, I can't go down. I don't say about the dhamm parcel. I don't say about the dhamm parcel because she knows. Like, oh, I'm so sick today. And she's like, okay. I'm not gonna see through this deception. And so she's like, it's fine. But you're going dhamm parcel tomorrow. okay, it's okay, Amma. I can go dhamm parcel. But you know, the stomach ache is just too bad. Every week. But like I said, I know some people who get stomach aches on Friday, on Sundays. Just before the work days, just because they don't want to. Now, a teacher or your fellow people will advise you one day, 2 days, 3 days. But after that, so before they even come, you can say, you're sick, aren't you? You can go rest, go rest. Because why? There's no point. Because no matter what you say, you got a small, I don't know, your foot is wounded. My foot is wounded. I can't walk. You know, I can't go to I can't go to the venue mall because my foot, even though you think there's nothing wrong with your foot, you can still walk. Ah, my foot, you know, I think I'm coming up with a fever as well with my foot. Yeah, I'm not saying that. Okay. Don't get me wrong. Injuries are bad. But if you're using it to deceive someone, to get something that you want done, people don't like that. Minds that do this, minds that see this, will no longer want to give you advice. They'll give you advice once or twice. After that, that's it. Because remember, they do that out of your own good. Because if you're someone who lies all the time, if you're someone who lies, then do I want you to lie? Because if you lie, you're getting more demerits, which is going to block your path, Nibbana, and who knows, will take you down the route to hell, the four great hells. Do I want you to do that? No. So I'll tell you once, I'll tell you twice, and then after that, you do you. Did you take a shower today? Yes. Sure? And then the next day, did you take a shower today? Yes. Are you sure? The third day, do you think anyone will come up to you and ask, do you take a shower? No, because you lie. So they'll be like, go take a shower. If not, they'll do what? Let you be. You do you. Whether you shower or not, well, everyone can block their nose. But you lying is... it's something different. That's the thing. Deceiving another person is... that's why you should always wear your feelings on your sleeve. You should wear yourself on your sleeve so people know who you are. People can see, he's honest, she's honest, she's genuine. Do you think you can help someone who's pretending to be anagami? Can you help someone who's pretending to be anagami? No matter what you say, no, I don't feel anything. Do you want chocolate? No, but I'm happy to accept it. I'm happy, like you can give it to me or not, but you know, I don't feel too much about it. But if you were to your teacher and they say, do you want some chocolate? You know, I have a great attachment to to chocolate. You choose whether to give it to me or not. Help me get out of this. Wear your feelings on your sleeve so your teachers and the peers around you, your noble association, can help you. Because remember, when a problem's not yours, everyone's the philosopher. No? When the problem's not yours, right? Everyone's a philosopher. But when it's your problem, you can't give yourself the advice that you give others. So if you go to someone and say, Mahatya, Mahatmi, like, sir, madam, I'm currently vexed. I'm currently feeling this pressure due to this. Don't worry. They'll give you an answer. Because why? They would like to help you. They want to help you. They really do. They really do. So deceitful. And I think the worst one, and it's the last one as well. Minds that are stubborn. Minds that are stubborn. That they have a view and they hold on to that view and they don't let go. No matter what you say, they hold on to this and they don't let go. They think, I'm okay. Okay, you know, this view is right. You know, I that that sweeping, they have to sweep while turning around. Right? That's how you're supposed to sweep. And you hold that view firmly. Again, that's like trying to carve a rock. Can you ever carve a rock? Unless you break the rock, you can't mold it. So again, with the view, if you have a strong view that you hold, simply, if you hold the view that I, so strongly, can people actually give you advice? Can people actually give you advice if you hold the view of I so strongly? I'm right. I'm someone who doesn't do that. Say, for example, you are given the unfortunate, for some of us unfortunate, task of helping, say, something that lots of people may feel disgusted about, you know. In other countries, we have a, what do you call them? Like a sewage system, right? Where like sewage would go down and will travel and get cleaned by itself. In Sri Lanka, we don't have that. We have pits, right? So for anyone who doesn't know, like we have pits. And sometimes after several years in the monastery, several weeks, but in other places, several years, they have to be cleaned. Cleaned out means they have to be emptied. And they had to be put somewhere else. If you had the job of cleaning all of these, do you feel, I'm not, you know, I can't touch that. Yeah, I can't touch that. I can't help, because I am who? I am someone who is clean and tidy. And again, if you hold that view so close, how can a teacher help? Sometimes the best way of getting rid of something that you have like a firm dislike or like or even fear is by doing it. So for example, if you are... So in a mundane way, in the way they get rid of fears is by slowly exposing you to that fear. For example, if you were scared of dogs, what they'll do is they'll say, okay, I want you to find your happy place, right? Where are you the most happy, right? And think about this, right? And they'll say, okay, dog. Okay, find your happy place. Then they'll show you a picture of a dog. Or they'll play the sound of a dog barking. Okay, find your happy place. And eventually they'll give you a dog to touch. And what they're doing, they're slowly exposing you to it and for you to realize that it's a dog, there's nothing wrong with it. And then you're no longer scared of dogs, according to what psychiatry. Sometimes the best way to get rid of some attachments is by actually doing it. Because if you from today onwards, say, I'm telling you, okay, you know, there's a job like this that we need to get done in the monastery. Anyone up for it? Now, you may go to the Valley Model and go, okay, I'm going to meditate about this. You know, feces are just the same thing as the food, and you can contemplate about this. However, you all know when you go to the Valley Mall and you're contemplating, are you just contemplating about that one thing? No, you go off topic, you go here and there and everywhere. But if you were in the place with it in front of you, now you have no choice but to contemplate. So you tell me, if you hold a view up so close and tightly that I'm not like this, I'm like that, or this is how it's supposed to be done, So if your teachers were to say, okay, everyone here is walking different, is walking wrong. Everyone has to walk sideways, like crabs. No, no, no. That's not how it's done. We can't do it like that. And so it's like, you know, that's not walking. Walking has to be done one leg in front of the other. Sideways? That's. I think the best example I can give, a real life example, it would be walking behind someone in step with them. So for example, our monks, Anagarikas. Don't know, Sitashravikas, do you have that as well? Walking in step? Yeah. And Siluvasis as well. When you do that, in the beginning, it is incredibly hard. Why? Because the first thing you get is, I am right, the person in front of me is wrong. why is that foot there? No, put the other foot. But you can't tell them because why you're walking. But you're always, you know, thinking, that's wrong. I'm right, that's wrong. I'm right, that's wrong. I'm right, that's wrong. Every foot you say, I'm right, that's wrong. I'm right, that's wrong. But what you're doing is you're holding your view. If you get rid of that view that I'm right, now remember, noble association isn't always a person. It's an occasion that becomes your teacher. That gives you, trust me, if you can walk in step properly, that is your karma sthana of nibbana. Your meditation, the meditation object for nibbana. It really is. Because you're trying to get rid of this feeling that, okay, I am right here. For example, like, you see this. Some people's, their gaits are different. Some people have longer strides. Some people have shorter strides. Some people, they waddle. Like, their feet are like this. Walking behind them, you have to follow their footsteps. And trying to walk in the same strides as them, immediately you think, oh, walk properly. Walk properly. You're waddling like a duck. Walk properly. Because why? In here you feel that what, I'm right, they're wrong. But if you get rid of this strong view, now that becomes your teacher. You get advice every single time. Ha ha ha. That's right. I'm wrong. That's right. And then you realize this is vipaka. Vipaka, mind. Vipaka, mind. But with defilements, vipaka, mind, wrong. Vipaka, mind, wrong. So even then, there and then, that becomes your teacher. That becomes great advice. So you tell me. So we have gone through around 16 of these qualities. 16 qualities, it's positives and negatives, right? Of what we should and shouldn't do. And I really do hope you actually think about these. While we go through all these examples, I hope you actually went through this and thought, do I still have these qualities? Because this is what is stopping you from getting advice. This is stopping you from becoming an arahant. Because why? Only if you have more qualities will you get more advice. More advice? Actually, this is more like this. More qualities, more advice. More advice, more Dhamma understanding. More Dhamma understanding, more qualities, more advice. Eventually, the outcome of this is a pen not working. No, the outcome of this is arahants. The outcome of all this is what? Arahants. That's the thing, right? We have, just like a young man or a young woman would stand in front of a mirror and look at their face to see, oh, there's dust there, there's imperfection here, there's a pimple there, there's a wart there, and let me fix all of that. Just like that, look at your own self and see, do I have that? Do I really have that? Do I do that? Do I feel that? If so, this is why I don't get advice. When someone half your age, gives you advice, when one day a 10-year-old comes up to you and gives you advice, understand that you've won. When a 10-year-old comes up to you and gives you advice, understand that you have won. Because that means you have, your qualities are so great that even a 10-year-old can give you advice. If a 10-year-old can give you advice, what sort of Dhamma understanding do you have? If someone who came to the monastery just yesterday can come up to you and give you advice, how much qualities do you think you have? How much, if you get advice from someone who's so new, how much Dhamma understanding should you have then? This is actually a really good way of measuring your Dhamma understanding. How much advice? How willing are people to give advice? Because I don't think any of you have to be in a position where you are the all-powering, or you are, I don't think any of you are in a position where you are someone who has to be above everyone else. For example, your teacher has to do that, because your teacher can't be someone who is childish or someone who is below you, or else you won't listen to your teacher. They have to be someone above. Because we're not like that. Let us be children. Children that can get so much advice. So in the end, be like Rahula. The most venerable Rahula. The great elder Rahula. Being able to throw a handful of sand up in the air and say, may I get this many advice. So that's the thing. This is what the great venerable Mahamoggallana, the great elder Mahamoggallana had preached, had shown everyone who's practicing the path what they need to do to get advice, what they need to do to be able to get advice for them to attain Nibbana. I mean, it's just, when I was looking over this, it was such amazing. I felt so great to hear such, because trust me, I read the English, right? Because I can read English. Still find Sinhala pretty hard. But I was reading the English and I couldn't really understand. So what'd I do? I have amazing, amazing people around me. I go up to several people and go, Sainase, you know, I was reading this the other day. Can you explain to me what this means? Can you explain to me what that means? Like, what does he mean by this? And even just yesterday as well, I went to my teacher. I was like, tomorrow, is it okay? I'm going to talk about, you know, this sutra with all of you. And so he's like, oh, what? He didn't know what the sutra was, so I showed it to him. It's like, it's a very good sutra. because this is not the Dhamma. However, it's not the Dhamma as well. It's not the Dhamma, but it's not the Dhamma as well. So, when the day comes that you can say, you know, today I got 15 different advice from 15 different people. That everyone, anyone feels so open to give me advice. That's the day that you've won. So I do hope you took something from this, because I certainly did. Trust me, I did. This is why. The things I learned, I want to give to as many people as possible, because you all deserve to know. I don't like hiding, you know, I found out about this. No one else should know. This is mine, right? The great Arhat Moggallana had told me, preached to me, not any of you. My precious. None of that. Whatever I learn, I tell. Because why? You all... Because I see everyone to be... No, people like me. Or minds like mine. Minds with ignorance and attachment that want to get out of it. I don't know, maybe I judged wrong. I don't know. But I do know that each and every one of you want to attain Nibbana. That's why. Everything I learn, I tell. Now I know if Guru Ramdas had given a sermon on this, he would have given a 9 hour, 10 hour, 15 hour, a season worth of sermons. Just like he did with the Vasalagati. But unfortunately, I'm not as great as he is. But hey ho. So I hope you have learned these 16 things, and I hope you do put them into your lives. Right? The more you put into your life, the more advice. The more advice, the more Dhamma understanding. Eventually, Arahat. Right. I do believe we have come to an end. Do we have any questions before we conclude today's sermon? I'll take the silence, no. So let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds. Today is the first and foremost. Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha, and passed it down to a generation of noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the Dhamma. Let's also take one transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present all the world, including all the chief places of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns, residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by his side through thick and thin, come and shine. There's also the Imam Transformers to Guru Sananse, as well as other monks resident at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas, Anagarikas attached to the monastery. There's also the Imam Transformers merits and express our gratitude to those who make great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby transliterating sermons, sharing them out to others, inviting others to join them, make the power of the merits. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who forsake our merits. Continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha a shelter, arms, well as medicines, as well as those who pass their know-hows, extend their well wishes. May the power of merits, if anything, be born in the world of blame. May they redeem themselves and be born in the bliss of blame. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits of mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, support us, assist us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in the spiritual progress. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As all demon and transfer master, devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, prime and sakudeva, as well as numerous gods and deities, who are committed to protect and fulfill the sum of disaster. Let's not forget, among them will be our garden deities, who keep watch over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment and transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends and family to us in this even long journey in samsara. Let's also take a moment and transfer merits to all the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost life in the world be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also take a moment and transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, and pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. May the power of the merits, if any of them be born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from non-meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, in its all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day. We've been a witness to the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Mehin Vanse in this very land itself. And finally, may the all the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become a Arhat Vanse or Arhat Mehin Vanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Nirvichupa Jem be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer the blessings to you.
Raga ginnen mitetva Dvesha ginnen mitetva Moha ginnen mitetva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labheva Nivan sapa labheva Nivan sapa labheva Tunrangi, Susi Ananta Mahaguna Belin, Siloka Sil Satyam, Nibbana Paramasukhin, Sukhita Rayatva, Sadhu, Sadhu.